Welcome to the Knee Pain Guru Knee Pain Teleclass. My name is Bill Paravano, the Knee Pain Guru, and today's special guest is a very good friend of mine. His name is Dr. Charlie Beck. I've known Dr. Beck for a number of years, actually pre-doctor days, so I'd like to welcome Dr. Beck.
Thanks, Bill.
So, Charlie, could you give your background?
Sure. I went to medical school, osteopathic school, actually, in Pikeville, Kentucky, and graduated there in 2004. Did my internship and residency at Westview Hospital in Indianapolis, Indiana, and currently am board certified in neuromusculoskeletal medicine and osteopathic manipulative medicine. I have a private practice in Indianapolis in two different office locations, and also a private practice in Clarksville, Indiana, just a few days a month.
Charlie, could you, a little bit of background on what exactly osteopathy is? I don't know if osteopaths today are as popular as they were, let's say, 100 years ago. So to kind of give people a background in exactly how osteopathy, you know, what exactly it is.
Sure. Our profession was founded by Andrew Taylor Still, who was an MD, and the story goes that he got his inspiration in about 1874, and it took him about 30 years to develop that inspiration into what has become known as osteopathy. And Still's incentive for it was he lost two children and a wife to spinal meningitis. And at the time, the only medications that they had were mercury derivatives, basically calomel and a few herbs and maybe aspirin. And, of course, nowadays with our advanced medicine, we can take care of people with meningitis. But back then, he basically just sat around and watched them die. There was nothing really that he or any of his colleagues could do. As you can imagine, he got a little downhearted. And so he set out with an idea that the body is much like a machine, and if the parts are working in a machine, then the machine functions without problem. And he began to create the idea that, well, what happens if this body is very similar? That if you can somehow get the parts to function normally, whatever the definition of normal is, that the body then is able to regain the health that it has lost somewhere along the way. And osteopathy is the result of that. It comes from the Greek word osteon, meaning bone, and pathos, meaning to suffer. So literally, it's the suffering of bone. And he started his first school in Kirksville, Missouri. It's called the American School of Osteopathy, or ASO. And he was the first medical school to actually really admit women. Half of the beginning class of five or six, were women. And really saw osteopathy as a place where any human being could come together and learn. And since then, it's grown to be accepted as the other form of medicine in all 50 states. And we learn the same basic curriculum as an MD medical school student, with a couple of key differences. There are philosophical differences in principles about kind of how we learn how the body works and how to approach our patient. And then we get also taught numerous hours of physical manipulation of the body to help restore it to health.
That, the piece you were talking about, philosophical differences between what an osteopath and what an MD is, a medical doctor, could you go into a bit on, you know, just a tad bit on what the philosophical difference is?
Sure. The allopathic or MD profession, and this is not to say that there aren't individuals who differ from this, but on the whole, they get taught that the patient, as they come in the door, is a list of symptoms. And the list of symptoms that the patient has defines the treatment, the medication, the surgery, the procedure that gets done to treat those symptoms. We get taught that there are diseases, and those diseases do have symptoms, but the patient that comes to the door is a human being. And so there are many aspects that need to be addressed. And again, some MDs really get this. It's part of their psyche, and so they understand it from the beginning and they add it on. But we get taught parts of that in medical school that the MDs don't get.
My own personal experience with osteopathy has been wonderful. I've had some really, I've been working with you for a number of years in different capacities and as far as my own issues that I was dealing with. One of the things, and the majority of it has been resolved by the time I did see you, was an issue with knee pain.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're familiar. It's actually coming up on 10 years that I dislocated my left knee a series of four times that I ended up tearing the ligament in my knee.
Mm-hmm.
And I did take the Western medicine route. I did have the replacement ligament put in my knee. They did a patella replacement, part of my kneecap. They took the tendon and recreated the ligament in my knee. However, as in my own journey towards recovery from that, and I was looking for something because now that the knee was healed, I still had stuff in the rest of my body. Could you kind of touch a little bit on, the knee is injured.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the relationship? Give the bigger picture of what's going on in the body as a knee injury takes place. Let me preface that a little bit. Of course, there's lots of different types of knee injuries. What I had was something that was torn.
Mm-hmm.
Just the more of a general understanding that when we have pain in our knee, or when you have pain in your knee, how does that impact the rest of the systems in the body? Bigger picture.
Wow. Well, if we look at just energy consumption, the knee being part of our locomotor system, because at least most of us are walking upright humans, if the knee becomes even stiff from swelling, so let's say that we'll go with a simple knee injury. You were out planting on the garden and you kneeled for far too long and your knees became inflamed and swollen. It can increase your energy expenditure with walking up to 300%. And so if we keep it in its simplest form, injuries like that can affect the immune system because energy that would be going to keep us healthy is going now to make us be able to walk. And until the knee heals, that energy is still expended. If we look into bigger pictures, the knee sits between the hip and the ankle, and in many cases, pain in the knee shows up because there is either a mechanical dysfunction in the hip or the ankle, or possibly a disease process going on like a degenerative joint. And in that case, knee pain can come about, and until the appropriate treatment is rendered, the knee pain pretty much sticks around. You may be able to get it to go away with manipulation or even an anti-inflammatory drug, but you aren't getting to the underlying cause. And that can, again, put serious energy expenditure load on the body trying to deal with all that stuff and maintain some semblance of normal physiological motion.
The piece that you were talking about regarding the physical manipulation of
mm-hmm.
the joint and how it relates to the ankle and the hip, can you speak on what takes place when a physical manipulation occurs? Or, like, how would you physically manipulate someone's knee or their hip or their ankle to
sure.
bring it back
sure.
into balance?
Absolutely. The first thing is, and it's a blessing, truly a blessing, is that we have two of nearly everything in our body. And so normally people come in complaining of one and not the other. And so we can, from the very beginning, make an assumption that, let's say, for example, the right knee is functional. And so I can palpate that with my hands, actually put my hands below the knee on the bones called the tibia and the fibula. And if the patient is seated, that keeps the femur, the bone above the knee, relatively stable. And so I can do what we call motion testing. I can flex the knee. I can extend the knee. I can rotate the lower leg with the toes going toward the middle of the body or the toes going away from the middle of the body. And I can push. I can pull. And each of those different movements is going to give me information about how the structures that make up the knee are moving. And so if we go through a moving knee, and let's just say it's a perfect world and everything works, so every test that I do comes back normal, and that was the right side of the body that we're testing, well, then we move to the left, and I know what normal feels like for that patient. And so I begin to compare the left side with the normally moving right side and note differences. And when I find differences, those go into the category of restriction of motion, something in the osteopathic profession we call somatic dysfunction. And they give me a diagnosis. And so let's say the knee may not extend fully. And it may not do what we call internal rotation, which is where the toes would come toward the middle of the body. If you were walking pigeon-toed instead of duck-footed, and those different characteristics will lead me to different tissues that may be tight, muscles that may be tight, ligaments that may have been injured and so may be tight or even loose. And I can use my hands to diagnose and then treat the structures to return them and help the body get them back to more normal function.
And when you're doing this in the context of a treatment where you would see a patient that
yes.
what you were
yes.
talking about, what kind of time frame are you looking at between diagnosing what's going on and manipulating the leg to get it to a place of where it's not so painful?
Well, let's take the normal scenario. We're probably looking at 60 seconds. And the only reason that it takes that long is because I usually tell my patients what's going on before I start working with it and get the structures to return to normal. So if we go back to the case we were talking about before, if it was the left knee and it wouldn't quite flex all the way, it wouldn't internally rotate, then after I diagnose it, I'd look at you. If Bill, you were the patient, I'd say, Bill, this is what appears to be going on with your knee. It will move in this direction, and I'll demonstrate by showing you that. And it won't move in this direction. And hey, do you feel that difference? And that wasn't the case over in the right knee, so we're going to try to return that to normal. And so then we start the treatment.
And so a person coming to you or coming to another osteopath, now would this be any osteopath?
No, unfortunately not any osteopath. Although in osteopathic medical school, everyone gets exposed to manipulation, just like people choose different specialties. There are some family practice doctors, there are some surgeons that come out of osteopathic school. Not everyone chooses to do manipulation, and even among those that do, some choose not to do it full-time. And so if we were looking at folks that did full-time osteopathic manipulation, yes, you would certainly get that relatively the same treatment. Of course, everybody's individual, so they're all going to have their own way of doing things. But if you look at someone who does, for example, family practice, and only a tiny bit of manipulation, then yeah, they may find that something that they could put in. And if you're looking at, for example, a rheumatologist who doesn't do any manipulation, then if you want to see the rheumatologist, you're not going to be able to, from a manipulation standpoint, tell that doctor from a traditional MD.
Got it. Okay. So, going back to our treatment scenario, it's very important when a person would be looking for an osteopath to do manual manipulation with their knee, that they find an osteopath that did specialize in manual manipulation.
Yes.
That would be their best bet. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you had, going back to a little bit ago what you had said before, it would take 60 seconds for the knee to go back, get less pain? That seems, I mean, I've experienced knee pain. And a lot of the people out there that are listening have experienced knee pain. So they've tried all sorts of things. They've tried stretching.
Yes.
They've tried exercise. They've tried all these different things. So for you to say that it would take only 60 seconds for a person to feel relief in their knee seems kind of unbelievable in a way. And I'm not doubting you. I'm just...
Absolutely. Well, let me add in some further explanation. It would take about 60 seconds from the time we got the diagnosis until the time we began treatment. And in some cases, treatment does take literally 60 seconds. And if it was really simple, the patient's done and their knee pain's gone. I've experienced that on more than one occasion, and it's not super rare. However, if I were going to put the common person in there, the treatment of an individual leg may take 5 minutes. And at the end of that 5 minutes, I'll usually have the patient stand up and walk and give me an evaluation and see how their pain is. And in almost every case, the pain is significantly better, if not gone. And when the patient reports back in, oh, you know, hey, I walked, and it doesn't hurt here like it did now, but it hurts over here. Well, then we may focus on that spot for another minute or two and keep repeating that procedure until the patient has, hopefully, no pain. And I would say I'm able to achieve that in over 90% of the patients. So we're looking at maybe 10 minutes total.
10 minutes you're looking at and a significant reduction in knee pain. For the average person out there, for 90% of your patients that you would see.
Yeah. Okay. If we're dealing with just the knee, then yeah, that seems pretty accurate.
Yeah. So this would be a person like going back to at the beginning, they were kneeling for someone doing gardening, and they were kneeling for an extended period of time.
Yes.
Whether it be gardening, whether they be working in, you know, on their car in the backyard or whatever the case is, they kneel for an extended period of time. They're having difficulty extending their knee. You're saying 90% of the people would have significant amount of relief in about 10 minutes.
Correct.
That is pretty cool. Could you go into a little bit more detail? We had initially talked about some of the physiological things that would begin to happen when a person began to experience knee pain. And the first one you had talked about would just, on a very basic scenario, energy consumption would be increased by 300%, which takes up a lot of the person's ability to fight off colds and get sick. So there was more of a tendency for them to get sick more.
Correct.
Are there others? Can you go into more detail on, because osteopaths are looking at the entire body, because a bigger picture understanding of what's going on in the body is important, what are other things? What can other things a person look at that would need to be caused?
Well, let's start off with the direct mechanical things. And the knee is, in functionality, very much like a door hinge. If we look at it from the front or the back, it swings. Just like if we took a door hinge and laid it on its side, it would swing exactly like the knee. And so if the knee, and in this case the hinge, gets twisted just a bit, then the rest of the leg has to compensate for that twist in order to allow us to have forward motion. So the foot and the ankle, the lower leg, the upper leg, and the hip all have to compensate in some way to allow us to still have forward motion. If it didn't, for example, we'd walk around in circles. Whether they be small or large circles, we'd still walk around in circles. But we obviously don't do that. We're able to compensate and move forward. And so knee pain, knee injury can cause foot and ankle pain. It can cause calf pain, for example, in the lower leg. It can cause hamstring or quadriceps pain in the upper leg. It can cause hip pain. It can, because the muscles that we call the postural muscles in the back, and there are a few of those, but those muscles can get tight because they have an extra workload put upon them because of the knee, and that can lead to low back pain. Those postural muscles being tight can also mean that every time we step down, the lumbar spine, which normally acts like a shock absorber, doesn't act like a shock absorber anymore. And so literally the impact of walking goes up into our body in a different way. And in extreme cases, that can even lead to headaches.
Wow. So from just the knee being injured, we're looking at the ankle can hurt, the calf can hurt, the hip can hurt, the lower back can hurt, all the way up to headaches. Just from the knee.
Absolutely.
I find that incredibly fascinating. And that's from a mechanical point of view, using the door hinge.
Sure. I mean, if we just look at the anatomy, that's what can happen.
So from an anatomical point of view.
Yes.
What about some of our systems? You know, we have our respiratory system, which is how we breathe, and our cardiovascular system, how the blood pumps throughout the body, and digestion and a lot of other aspects I know are determined by how the anatomy is set up. I know, and I've read a little bit on osteopathy, and one of the things that I've heard, one of the osteopathy mottos is structure governs function, meaning that the structure needs to be in place. The bones need to be in place before everything else around it begins to work properly. So could you kind of, go through some of the major systems in the body and what other things a person experiencing knee pain could possibly experience?
Sure.
With, having knee pain?
All right. We'll kind of go through this systematically, and I'll do my best to touch on at least one system or one part of each system in the body. Let's go back to the structure, and there's a muscle called the psoas muscle, which actually attaches at the upper part of the femur and runs up through the body. It's the biggest muscle in the body. Yes?
Charlie, could I interrupt you just for a second?
Sure.
I just want to make sure everyone gets an understanding of the anatomy. So the femur is the bone in the upper leg.
Correct. That's the bone in the upper leg.
Okay. And any of the other parts, I want to make sure everyone gets an understanding of not so much the anatomical name for it, just the place that they could point to.
Exactly. The femur is also known as the leg bone or the hip bone.
Okay.
And so when people fall and break their hip, typically what happens is they break their femur.
Got it.
But okay. So in the upper part of the femur, and it's basically if you were to the place where your leg meets your torso, the crotch. If you were to put your hand on the inside of your crotch, it's about four fingers width distance away is where the psoas muscle attaches. And that psoas muscle is a huge muscle. I read somewhere where it's able to exert 1,200 pounds per square inch of force. And its primary function is to actually pull the leg up. So if we, if you've ever run track and you do the high jump, the people that do that really use that psoas muscle to pull that leg up really quickly. When the psoas muscle gets tight, it'll keep us from standing up, and those people literally walk doubled over. They can't straighten. But the interesting thing is that the psoas muscle, if we look at mechanics, when the leg gets injured, in this case the knee gets injured, the psoas muscle can be stimulated to contract. And the psoas muscle and all muscles in the body are covered by a substance called fascia. And fascia is the little, if you've ever eaten a piece of beef and you've pulled the fat off the beef, there's a spider web kind of that attaches the fat to the meat, and that's fascia. And the fascia is really interesting. If we were to take away the muscles and the bones and the blood vessels and the nerves and the organs and leave the skin and the fascia, you would still look like you. So the fascia plays a huge role in the body. It's a connective structure. And if the psoas muscle gets stimulated and the fascia gets triggered, interestingly, the fascia of the psoas muscle can, in some people, be contiguous with, if it's a female, the ovary, and if it's a male, one of the kidneys. And so a psoas contracture can either predispose you to something like heavy menstrual cramps or even predispose you to being able to develop kidney stones. And the psoas muscle as well, because it goes into the abdomen, if there's tension in the abdomen, it can slow down something called peristalsis, which is the wave mechanism that moves food through the gut. So simple muscle tension can cause you to go from being normal in your bowel movements to being slightly or significantly constipated. Now, if we go back and we look at the knee from a different aspect, and in this case we're going to look at the knee and include the leg, those postural muscles that I talked about, there's one postural muscle called, oh goodness gracious, I'm drawing a blank. It connects the hip bone to the rib cage, and it's called the iliocostalis. And all the muscles were named in Latin when they actually still spoke in Latin, so they seem very foreign to us, but the muscle really means, hey, it's the one that connects the ribs to the hip. And that muscle has different bellies, and bellies are places where contraction occurs. It's the thick part of the muscle. There's one muscle belly for each of the 12 ribs, so there's one muscle on the left and one muscle on the right. And the body is pretty amazing in that it uses things that are relatively fixed in space to pull on. So the rib cage, relative to the rest of the body, doesn't move very much. If you look at the rib cage in relation to the arms, it has very little motion. Same in relation to the legs. And so if you get a knee strain, knee injury, and it affects those postural muscles pull on the rib cage. And because they pull on the rib cage, they keep the rib cage from working optimally. And so that can lead to sensations of simply, hey, you know, I'm not functioning at 100%, all the way up to shortness of breath. And because the rib cage doesn't function optimally, then it can ever so slightly, or in some cases even minorly, restrict cardiac output, giving people that have a predisposition to cardiac problems to develop something like even chest pain. And it can certainly affect the ribs and the lungs, and so if it affects the lungs, it could lead you to, with your increased energy expenditure in keeping the knee working and your increased susceptibility to catching a cold, you could catch a cold, which could easily turn into pneumonia. All from not being able to mechanically get the body to work correctly, because in the osteopathic belief system, the body functions as a whole. Individual parts influence everything else.
Keep going.
Well, I'm wondering if I've answered your question. We've covered a couple of systems.
Okay. I'm taking notes here because this stuff is fascinating. There's some things that I didn't even know here.
Mm-hmm.
Chest pain, shortness of breath, kidney stones, constipation, painful menstrual cramps in women, all from knee pain.
And it's, you know, each of those would be rare. And let's say that if we took 1,000 people, you might get 2 or 3 that would have those symptoms. And so, interestingly, you would treat their knee pain. You wouldn't do anything else. Treat their knee pain, get their knee pain to go away, and they'd come back in and say, wow, you know what, I can breathe better. Or, you know, hey, my menstrual cycle seemed more regular. So don't let you believe that this is going to be, you know, hey, 90 people out of 100 are going to have these symptoms, because that's not the truth. But certainly some people, if their bodies happen to be in the kind of the right place at the right time, can develop those symptoms from something as simple as knee pain.
Wow. And you're talking about the average person.
Yes.
With
yes.
knee pain. Got it. Because I know from my own experience, from my... The knee injury I had, and correct me if I'm wrong, was a little bit more than the average knee injury that
sure.
I have.
Yes.
And I know I experienced the shortness of breath.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know there were times when I was dealing with constipation and some other issues that just... I mean, there's just this overall, it feels like you're in a vise, and things just keep getting tighter and tighter and tighter, and like, how do you want to stretch, and stretching like you did before doesn't work, and
right.
nothing seemed to work. And
exactly.
Yeah, so that's an incredibly frustrating place to be. However, you know, you're giving this huge light at the end of the tunnel, that there is physical things that people can do.
Yes.
Such as seeing an osteopath. That would be extremely beneficial. Let me qualify my statement. An osteopath that's specialized in manual manipulation to be able
Correct.
To help themselves with their knee pain.
Correct.
Can you go into a little bit more? You had mentioned that a person can even develop headaches as a result of experiencing knee pain.
Mm-hmm.
Can you go into those systems, how that would develop or how that would happen?
Absolutely. The way the spine works in the body, we have 3 different curves, one in the neck, one in the torso or the ribcage area, and then one in our lower back, the lumbar spine. When we walk, because they're curves, they function similar to the old style leaf springs on cars, so that as we walk, each of them flexes just a little bit to help absorb the shock of our feet hitting the ground. And if you think about the head being kind of a liquid-filled bowling ball, because the female head on average weighs about 14 pounds, the male head weighs about 16 pounds, and it's sitting on top of the neck, which it's, you know, one way of thinking about it is like a stick, that if you begin to take away the shock-absorbing effect of the 3 different sections of the spine, then the impact of each step that we take transmits directly up into the head as more force than normal. And in its simplest form, a headache is like the little red light on the dashboard of your car. It just tells you something's wrong, but it doesn't necessarily tell you what it is. And so if we're getting that significant impact, we may notice that, wow, you know what, I just walked around the mall and I've done that for, that's the way I exercise, it's my health, and all of a sudden I have a headache. And, wow, you know what, I feel this foot pain or knee pain or hip pain, something like that, because it may not always show up in exactly the place where what we would consider the dysfunction to be. But you go home and you sleep and you wake up the next morning and it's still there a little bit, but your headache may be gone because you're no longer tripping the switch for the body, and so the body turned the switch off and thus the headache went away. But you go walk the next day and, oh, I got a headache again. And suddenly you begin to notice over the course of a few days that there seems to be a correlation between me walking and getting a headache. And in cases like that, doing manipulation on the body and getting the knee working better, then the headaches begin to go away.
Could you, and of course, this is all great and wonderful information. However, if a person is listening to this, they're going, what can I begin to do now? What are some of the, if you have a person that comes in with knee pain, and maybe it's recurring knee pain, is there something that they can do that you send them home with? To practice, or maybe some type of self-care tip that they can do?
Is there something that I send them home with? Now, I will be honest with you, that depends on the patient. Most people, when I treat them, they, let's say that we were able to get their knee pain to go away in the office during our session. I don't send them home with exercises. What I tell them to do is to go home and live their life. And if they have the knee pain that recurs, then we begin to look deeper at why it's there. So, for example, if someone came in and said, oh, hey, I was out in the garden yesterday, well, to me that seems like an isolated incident. If it was spring and you were just planting, then, all right, we don't need to worry about you doing that next week and the week after and for the next 6 months. If they said, you know, hey, I took a new job, and in my job I'm doing this or that repetitive motion, then I may look at things that we can do to give them exercises at home so they don't have to come and visit me as often.
I'm interested. I'm curious about when you said deeper issues. Mm-hmm. So it when you said that, I'm almost getting a picture in my head of maybe there's some underlying cause that's actually manifesting or ending up in knee pain.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. There can be a number of underlying causes, and so we'll look at the underlying cause of, let's say, degenerative arthritis. So certainly if the joint isn't functioning normally, then that can show up as pain, because that's the way the body is built. And that in that case, then the knee pain might be something that we would refer out to an orthopedist to have a look at the knee and see if there was something that could be done from their specialty standpoint to get the knee pain to go away. If we looked at the knee pain, not necessarily from an arthritis standpoint, but sometimes the body can use pain as a messenger. And so sometimes knee pain can indicate, because the knee is about being flexible, the knee can indicate lack of flexibility in one's life. And the Chinese have a belief that the left side of the body is feminine energy and the right side of the body is masculine energy. So I'm going to give you a scenario where something like knee pain may be a message from the body. Let's say that you have a job. And your boss is male, so we're talking about the right-sided energy of the body. And you feel very stuck in your job. You feel like your talents aren't being used very well. And literally aren't able to kind of flex your body, your psyche, into moving and being the person that you feel like you could be. That could show up as knee pain. And it's just, in a way, it's your body giving you a red flag saying, hey, we need to do something about this. And, you know, so it shows up, emotions show up physically.
I had heard of that. However, I didn't really delve into it all that much in terms of that influences from people around you can result in pain in your own body.
Yes.
And this is something that you would see regularly, or, I mean, out of, let's say, 100 patients or 1,000 patients that you see, how many that you would suspect end up with some sort of issue in their life as a result of the people in and around them and in their life?
Well, let me answer your question by telling you how I evaluate the patient. When you come into my office as a new patient, I first ask you a simple question: what can I do for you today? And I'll let you tell your story in your own words. And I listen until you tell me you're done. When that occurs, then I begin to ask you systematically questions about the body, such as, do you ever have any headaches? You know, how's your vision? When's the last time you've been to see an eye doctor? How frequently do you have a bowel movement? There are lots of questions that I ask to round out the story. And when I get done, I put the filter on in my own head, and I begin to ask myself, does this seem like it has an emotional part to it? Does the patient seem distressed when I ask them about their stress level or their ability to sleep? And if it does have that part, then I start to see how receptive the patient is to hearing about the emotional side of how the body works, because some people are, and some people just don't believe in it. It doesn't exist for them, and that's okay. If that person seems, in my mind, to have an emotional component, then I begin to talk about it and say, you know, hey, the knee can represent this, and it may be this kind of story going on in your life. Does that ring true with any part? You know, was I right on, or was I somewhere close, or was I way off? And I would say probably in more than 50% of the cases, I'm either right on or close. And the patient will then be able to look at what's going on in their life, and as well as getting physical manipulation, they can begin to make some changes either inside in their ability to accept the situation or handle the situation, or outside in directly influencing the situation. And your initial question was about what percentage, and, you know, I'd say probably 30, maybe 40% of the patients that I come in, I mention something about emotions too.
30 to 40%. It seems like a pretty significant number of people walking around that have some sort of impact
yes.
on their body as a result of influences by other people.
That's very much true, and it's another thing that sets the manipulating osteopaths apart from the MD or our allopathic counterparts. The allopaths are taught that 35% of their patients will have what they call psychosomatic illness. It's all in your head. And those people, usually it's actually all in their body, and those people succeed really well where normal Western medicine would fail them.
Huh. So I know a lot of the people that I've worked with my program, a lot of their frustration comes out of the fact that no one's really listening to them. No one's really asking them what's wrong, and they're kind of putting like this mold on them, like you have knee pain, and isolating that and just addressing the knee pain and not looking at the rest of their body, like what else is going on that could result in the knee pain, or how is this knee pain resulting in other things in the rest of your body?
Yes.
Kind of like looking through both ends of the microscope, so to speak, or looking in a looking at it through a microscope and then looking at it through a telescope. So you see both the bigger picture and the smaller picture as well, to use those as contrasting understandings of what this person before me is telling me about their knee pain.
Yes.
I look at, in my program, I'm looking at five different components, and I'm curious as if you can give any perspective or insight on those different components. One is water. Another is diet. A third is exercise. A fourth is stretching. And the fifth is breathing.
Okay.
Is any of those that stand out that you can kind of give, like, your perspective on, your thoughts on, any insights you have?
Sure. Diet, exercise, water, breathing. What was the last one?
Stretching.
Stretching. Okay. Let's look at water first. When we're born, our bodies are 70% water. By the time we reach old age, that percentage has gone down, and most people might hit 50 to 55% water. But the interesting thing is that our knee has what they call a synovial joint, fluid-filled joint, that sits in between it, in between the bones. And it is filled with fluid. And in the body, 10% is a huge number. So being dehydrated 10%, for example, could land you in the hospital. And in the case of the joints, being dehydrated can cause the joints to be closer together and rub and cause pain. And so water is a huge component in simply keeping the body flexible. It is nature's natural lubricant. Diet plays a key role as well. Cartilage and bone, when we go down to the most basic components, are chemistry. And bone is made up of collagen, which is the stretchy stuff in our skin. It's also made up of a substance called calcium hydroxyapatite, and that's the hard substance. And the cartilage is made up of different connective tissues that have a cushiony feel to them. They're very slick. And if you don't have the right basic building blocks in your diet, then the body can't rebuild and repair the tissues that it's supposed to. And we go through a continual process of being broken down and built back up as we live. They say that about every 7 years, every cell in your body has been replaced at least once. And if you don't have the right building blocks, then your body is trying to do a job that you simply haven't given it the tools to do. And so you wind up with inferior grade substances. And so it's very important to be able to eat the right diet, get the right nutrition. And nutrition for everyone is slightly different, although we all need vitamins and minerals. But when you get the right nutrition, then everything begins to work. If we look at exercise, and let's go with stretching and exercise, and the way they go together, if we're young, we can usually get away without stretching and not get injured when we exercise. The older that we get and the more that water concentration in the tissue goes down, the more it's important to stretch both pre post-exercise in order to not injure ourselves at a bare minimum. The more we stretch and warm up our muscles, the easier the exercise is on our body. And so stretching is a vital component for, you know, the reality is anyone that's over, say, 25, if you develop a practice of stretching that leads on into your golden years, then you enter the golden years with much less likelihood of getting injured. Exercise is vitally important. The old adage, if you don't use it, you lose it, certainly holds true here. If you are sedentary, then the muscles in your body don't work as well. They begin to lose muscle mass. And the same goes with your digestive system. It doesn't work as well. So we were designed to exercise. And as far as breathing goes, when we breathe in, the air that we breathe, at least hopefully if we're somewhere close to sea level or thereabouts, is 21% oxygen. And that comes into the lungs and goes into the bloodstream. And the body uses oxygen to fuel the furnace of each of the cells. It also can use oxygen in the chemistry that's required to keep the body going. And if we don't do breathing exercises, so we don't get full capacity out of our lungs, then we don't get full oxygenation into the bloodstream. And we are trying to run a car on inferior grade fuel. That's a good way of looking at it. It may still get you there, but if you're trying to go up a hill in the mountains, it may stall out on you because the fuel just isn't right. And our body can do exactly the same things, and we call that an injury.
Once again, I'm taking notes here. Each one of those points we can have probably an entire call on. Mm-hmm. I know I've actually just got done reading a book not too long ago by an Iranian doctor named Dr. Batman Geldi.
Mm-hmm.
And he was treating his patients with tap water. And one of his perspective on it, and I know, you know, you're reinforcing that, how important water is in a person's diet, that, you know, we are a huge percentage of water. And I'll refer to him as Dr. B. Dr. B was saying that you can address knee pain with water. And by increasing your water intake, and not saying that that is going to address all knee pain, however, it can help get rid of knee pain, because the joint dehydrates and the nerves in the joint send signals to the brain that says there's not enough water here.
Right.
One of the things he was talking about was the pH balance in the body, the pH, the measure of whether it's acid or alkaline.
Correct.
And how that has an effect on the joint, especially when the water level or the percentage of water is not enough in the body. That the acidic state that's created in the joint. This is actually something that I've been looking at. In the case of arthritis, and I know there's different types of arthritis in the knee joint specifically, I had an opportunity to look at an MRI of arthritis in the knee joint, and it looked to me like the arthritis was eating away at the joint, which kind of ties in with what we're talking about, that is there potential to address arthritis, a knee pain from arthritis a person experiences with water? And have you had any experience with that?
I haven't read the book that you were discussing, so I'm not exactly sure how that doctor looks at water, but one of the things that I do with my patients is I make sure that they have a couple of things going for them before I ever really get into heavy treatment. One is I make sure that they drink plenty of water. If they're dehydrated, they're not going to heal. And the formula that I use is to take half of their body weight in pounds, and that's a number. And they should drink that number of ounces of water per day. And that doesn't have to come in directly as water in a glass. It could be from soup. It could be from foods like lettuce. But they just need to make sure that they get that amount of water. The second thing that I check for is to make sure that they're sleeping, because if they aren't sleeping, they aren't healing. And so I make sure that they're getting enough sleep, and if they aren't getting enough sleep, then we talk about ways to improve that and keep working with it until their sleep is to a place where they can get 7 or 8 hours of restful sleep per night. And then I talk to them about their diet and get them to make good choices. And when we can put all those things together, we're setting that patient up to win in whatever they came into the office with. And so in this case, knee pain, if their body isn't set up to be able to correct what's going on, then it won't correct it.
It's coming into the forefront even more so how crucial water is to addressing what's going on in the body. Well, we are about out of time, and I know we can probably keep talking here for hours. However, for the context of this call, we're going to wrap it up here. Dr. Beck, I want to thank you so much for taking your time to speak with me. And I look forward to bringing you back on and kind of delving deeper on some of these other topics in regards to knee pain.
Sounds wonderful, Bill.
If someone wanted to get in touch with you, how would they go about doing that?
Well, we could go, goodness, let me give you three ways of getting in touch with me. We'll start off with an email address, and that is Dr. Charlie Beck, CharlieBeck, @gmail.com. And that's a good way. I can give you office phone number, which is 317-506-9029. That's office here in Indianapolis, Indiana. And then email address, which is www.osteopathicvision.com. And it's OSTEOPATHIC, same word, VISION.com.
Well, great. Well, Charlie, thank you once again for speaking, and I'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye-bye.